Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Hi, Deep Divers. June here. Because of a scheduling snafu, and you'll know more about why in upcoming months and weeks, but I could not make today's episode with our very special guest and special friend, Melissa Rausch, but I am so excited for you all to hear it, and I will be back with Jessica next week, but please stay tuned for this amazing conversation with Jessica St. Clair and Melissa Rausch.
Deep Divers, oh God, do I have a treat for you. A little chocolate truffle to unwrap for you today. One of my best friends in the world, I call her my sister because that's what she is. This is Melissa Rausch. She is an actor and comedian, a writer, producer. You might know her from a little show called The Big Bang Theory, where she played Bernadette. Melissa also starred in the feature film The Bronze, which is so fucking funny. You have to go immediately and watch it. She co-wrote it with her husband. She executive produced it. She will be in a Night Court revival in the new year on NBC, which she also executive produced. Oh, and in her spare time, she has launched a pediatric cancer charity called Oscar Kids, which is so special. And we're going to talk about that more. It currently has an Omaze campaign running through October 14th, where you can win an Audi when you donate to enter. Everything raised is going to pediatric cancer research. Melissa, welcome to The Deep Dive.
I am so excited to be here. My heart is actually racing a bit. I'm so excited.
Friend, I don't even know where to begin because you have been with me. And let's just, for full disclosure, Melissa and I have already spoken today at 8:30 in the morning on our way home from drop-off because yesterday, Melissa confessed something she felt terrible she had done done wrong in her life. I then told her not to worry about it. Why are you obsessing over this? And then I called her not more than 3 hours later and left her a voice memo to tell her something I had done that I felt terrible about. So then she called me this morning to tell me not to worry about it. So that is like us in a nutshell. If I ever killed somebody by accident, my first call would be to Melissa because she would say, listen, you're doing your best. Okay, don't you dare beat yourself up. Also, she's from New Jersey, so I know she would help me bury the body.
1,000%. I already have a plan.
We've been preparing to bury dead bodies for the time we were 2 years old. Melissa,
it's how they teach it in school. That's a kindergarten class.
Remind me the moment we met.
Okay.
We first met.
There was a first meet cute we both did Best Week Ever on VH1.
That is how we paid our rent. Yes.
That's
as struggling comedians.
I saw you from afar at a Best Week Ever holiday party.
That's right. I'm sure I was wearing a cardigan from Express that I probably had worn so many times that the pit stains were unsalvageable.
Now, you looked put together and beautiful as always.
You were wearing a probably tights under shorts or something.
That was my
horrendous
jam. A cutoff jean short, maybe a weird pirate shirt and a layered belt that I had decided to put together. It was a very quick meeting. I told you that I was obsessed with you.
And I said the same.
And then, but it was very brief.
Yeah.
And then But when we really got into it was a Best Week Ever live show that we were traveling to. We were on an Amtrak
to Baltimore.
That's correct. And we sat next to each other.
Yeah.
And I fell so deeply in love. I was on a tear with a sour icebreaker kick, and I was popping them in my mouth, I would say maybe 1 minute. And you said, can I ask you, is this a compulsion? And that was it. That was it.
Well, and you said yes. And then we immediately divulged like our deepest, darkest secrets within maybe 15 minutes of knowing each other.
I felt like I had, and
this is how it feels when you meet your best friend, one of your best friends, is you feel like you've known each other since you were in preschool, even though you are meeting in your 30s. I mean, no, we were in our late 20s probably at that point, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
And you were about to move to Los Angeles, which you then did. And then I followed. And that is where we really solidified our friendship was when we moved out here. We didn't have a dollar to our name. We were doing Best Week Ever. It was so dark.
We were crying in
Target parking lots.
All the crying in the cars. I think I cried in my car to you in every nook and cranny of this city.
Yes.
And we also didn't know on Best Week Ever, you didn't know week to week if you were going to be called in.
Yeah, and there was a strike on, and it was between that and paying your bills. Like, I literally was like, that $500 was everything to us.
Everything.
Yeah, we have to make, like, horrible jokes about Britney Spears. It was just a dark time, and I do think you also bond so deeply when you're going through a dark time. Now, fast forward, we have so many wonderful times, and Melissa hosts my baby shower and everything. And then I get the big C, and I believe Melissa was, you know, my fourth call after my parents and, you know, Dan, and you showed up at the door within like an hour of diagnosis with bags and bags of organic food. And that is where I knew, like, okay, there is a Jewish person in my life now. She's going to feed me through this experience, and you didn't stop.
That is, well, I just love you so much. And crisis does, it's all I can do to throw all the food at it until someone says, mercy, please stop.
I was like, fuck, now I'm gonna have to eat these lentils. But you were like, I'm gonna introduce you to, you were off the sour balls that you were cracking. You were into the organic food. And then, Melissa, you did not let me be for. You were the one who would lie that you were in the neighborhood. So Melissa doesn't live near me at all. As you know, I live very far from all of my dearest friends. And she would just say, hey, I'm around the corner. And I was so depressed at that time that it never occurred to me that there's no world in which you would ever be around the corner from me. And you'd say, wanna take a walk? You'd be like, wanna take a walk? Because I would have told somebody that I was sad that day. And so then there was a group text, like, who can get to her?
Mm-hmm.
And you would just, or sometimes you would just be around the corner.
Just to be around the corner. And here's the thing. As you know about me, I have a no lying policy. That's true.
If it happens,
yes. I'll break into a sweat if I have to, so I don't. But that is an area that I broke it for you, because I knew if I said to you, can you hang today?
I would say no, or don't drive in this traffic. I'm like, you never want someone to go out of their way.
Yes.
But I really gave in, and you were at every chemo session. You would read out loud to me from various In Touch magazines. A lot of In Touch, a lot of Oprah magazines.
Eating some Cheez-Its.
You would feed me Cheez-Its, and you were always dressed in an insane. Melissa, what she dresses in her off time, she looks like an extra from Newsies. She's always got like a weird cap on and a gigantic sweatsuit. So like nobody knew who you were. But there have been times we have been out and about, and, you know, fans, because Big Bang is such a humongous worldwide hit, fans will follow us. And because I'm always wrapping you up in my arms, I do think we have been mistaken for lovers on several occasions.
And nothing makes me happier. Nothing makes me happier. I do have to say, one of my favorite things was coming in to see you during chemo and you going to town on whatever I was wearing.
Really? I was so aggressive.
And I looked forward to it. And I think the Newsies was a big one. But I also feel that I didn't know what the appropriate chemo attire was. So at one point I came in a puffy vest and you were like, this needs to end. I don't know what you're thinking coming in. And you were right. You were 1,000% right.
I was on so many drugs, and it was like a truth serum. It was like the golden lasso because I was so aggressive to my friends about their life choices, about their fashion choices. Remember that nurse, Paige Woodward, who we had on? I told her she should go to Tahoe with that guy she just met on Hinge. You know, I had a lot of thoughts about, Khloe Kardashian and her relationship with Lamar and how, you know, she was repeating a lot of things in her life, some like unhealthy patterns. But yeah, but Melissa has also driven 2.5 hours when Dan was in the hospital. And that was some really dark times. Like, we thought we were dark. Then we got even darker. You drove 2.5 hours to deliver me a Chinese chicken salad.
You needed
in
a Chinese chicken
Duarte,
salad.
In California. You needed it. Dropped it to me.
That needed to happen.
I'm not going to survive this. And then you were like, and then I was like, I have to go back. And you got back in your car and drove 2.5 hours home.
And I would do it time and time again. But you also called me out when I was there because I started, there was food that I was bringing to you and I couldn't figure out how to carry it from the parking lot in. So there was a wagon.
You brought a tiny red wagon.
There was a wagon, but I couldn't properly operate it because I'm not quite the size of a normal human. And you were like, this is insane because I was bumping into walls as I was trying to bring you the food. You're like, you're causing a scene. Please stop. Park your wagon and get out of here.
Because it wasn't enough. And I know we were going to move on. But this is Melissa. Like, I want you deep divers to understand who Melissa is. Yes. She doesn't just drive 2.5 hours. She brings you not just a Chinese chicken salad, but she said, I didn't know which one you wanted. So I bought all the salad and also every juice you could find. Like, it's just there is no end to your generosity.
Well, that's fair.
And you are a natural born caretaker. Would you say that about yourself? You've been caretaking from the day you were born?
I do. I feel like that is my comfort zone. It's where I think it's where I have my least anxiety.
Really? You feel your most calm when you're taking care of other people?
Yes. There's like, I would say it's an area that I worry for others, but I'm not in a, like, that's a... It feels like, okay, if that's sort of my way, I guess, of feeling like there's some control. It's like, if I can push this Chinese chicken salad in your face, then things will be okay.
And you really are calm in a storm, too, I will say, Melissa. Like, you really made me feel like it was going to be okay. And I know that for some caretakers, it's hard to let yourself be taken care of. Do you have that? Do you have that problem? You let me take care of you, but I didn't know if I also don't give you a choice now. But
that is true. But I'm not very good at being taken care of, but you do a wonderful job of that. And I will say, I just want to go back a second because it's so kind of you to say this about me, but it's also a testament to who you are because you, from the moment we became friends, are just all you do is put out love. So the reason that your friends took care of you is because it was our chance to give to you what you've been giving to all of us for so many years.
Sweet. Well, I can never.
If you were a dick, I wouldn't bring you a Chinese chicken salad.
That's true. You're not bringing random dicks a Chinese chicken. But I will say, though, that it's very important. I think people hear this. I was thinking about this today. It is a gift to let somebody take care of you. It really
is true.
So, like, yes, the caretakers out there, and I know that so many of our deep divers are, because I hear them, they DM me and tell me all the wonderful things they're doing for their friends, or they DM me and say, oh, my friend is sick and how can I help? And, you know, women are just absolutely incredible people. We just are always about taking care of each other. But I do think it's so important to also know when you need to be taken care of and when you need to wave the white flag and say, like,
so true,
I'm underwater. And I appreciate that you do that for me. Like, you will, Melissa and I don't talk every day. We will go sometimes weeks without hearing from each other. But I do know that if you ever need me or I need you, I will hear back within 30 seconds.
1,000%. If there's an SOS,
drop everything.
There's, yes, 1,000%. And I feel, but, and you're 1,000,000% the same way. And I do feel like I've learned from you in that when you, because you did release at some point and say, like, I have no choice and I need to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And then it was really your urging after that to say, like, ask for help.
Yeah. It's my joy to give back to you girls.
Yeah.
It really is. It's my joy. Because to be in that position for so long, like, you long for a day where you're not the one having a crisis. I mean, you don't want your friends to have a crisis, but you know that everybody, I mean, we always joke, June and I, and she's so sorry she can't be here. I'll let her tell the deep divers where she is because it's really a highlight of her career and as a human. We all get our turn in the hot seat, as it were.
Yeah.
So just know if you're having a dark time, you know, you will get over it. The sun will shine again. I always will say that to my friends, like, the sun is going to come out again. I promise you. As my mother said, I'll never forget, in the dark, you probably remember this.
I love this so much.
I told you this over and over again when you need it. My mother, when things were so dark and I was getting over being sick and Dan was sick and I didn't know what was going to happen, I went up to my mom, who had her back to me. She was doing the dishes. And my mother is one of 14 kids. So many crazy things happened in that family, you know, just like, you know, the Kennedys. Like, if you have that many kids, like, a lot of crazy shit goes down. And she's lived through a lot. And I said, Mom, what is going to happen? Like, what is going to happen? And she said, I don't know, but I can promise you it's not going to stay like this. That's the truest thing anyone's ever said to me. It ain't going to stay like this.
I love it so much. That sort of became a mantra. I feel like we just kept saying that. I repeat that to myself so often.
Yes.
Those are some wise words.
It's dark now, but it ain't going to stay like this.
And it didn't. She was right.
Yeah, she was right. I guess sometimes parents know things. Usually she knows, telling them.
She knows her shit.
They fucked us up, but sometimes they know some things.
She knows some things. She helped me with my curtains when I first moved out here.
Of course she did.
She said, send me the dimensions.
That's the thing. And I'll let you know
if it'll work.
When you are one of my best friends, my mother takes you on as their own. And when I met your mother, I felt as if I'd known her my whole life. My mother is so obsessed with you. Because you're very close to your mom, especially. So, okay. So, Melissa, yes, this is who you are as a person. You're an angel baby and you're a pocket person. I can put you in my pocket. And I like that about us. We're kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito in that movie where they play twins.
That is the kindest thing you've ever said to me. I've never felt more seen in my life.
We're like twins that way. But Melissa, you and I... Okay, so you started out as a stand-up, which is obviously, at the time you were doing that, not many women in that game.
True.
Okay.
Yes.
And you were in New York and you for college, which was insane to me. And you just started pounding the pavement and doing your bits. And then you started creating your own work, right? Mm-hmm. So you've written and produced and starred in a movie. That was a huge labor of love.
Yeah, for sure. It was really because I think all of it was coming from no one wanted me. So it was like, no, okay, I'll just create my own worth. Like, same with stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, it was a way of getting to perform when no one was really giving you the chance to. So I was one of those weird people in Times Square that would hand out flyers to get a 5-minute set.
But you also forced your mother to put you in. This is one of my favorite stories. About you. You forced your mother, your poor mother, to put you in beauty pageants as
and
a child.
I should not have been.
You were not that great looking.
No.
So that you could perform in the talent part.
That is correct. It was the Cinderella scholarship pageant. There was no scholarship. I don't know why they called it that, but it was maybe there was like $100. Cinderella scholarship pageant in New Jersey. And I got a flyer for it, and I saw they had a talent portion.
How old were you at the time?
8, 6, 7.
That's insane.
And I was so excited because I wanted to do my tight 10 of
which involved celebrity impersonations.
Celebrity impersonations, because I saw them done on Star Search.
Of who? Who did you do?
Jack Hay from 227. Don Knotts. Mr. Furley from Three's Company. Pee Wee Herman.
No.
Which was just a lot of, ha ha, I can't find my bike. Who else? Oh, and Tracy Ullman. So
great taste.
I needed somewhere to shell my wares. And the beauty pageant was it, because there was no talent shows in town. So my mother said if I saved up my shekels, I could get.
So insane.
So she said she would split the cost with me.
Did you win?
I won the talent portion.
The talent portion.
But in order to get to the talent portion, I had to do a beauty pageant. Toothless. Like you said, not a looker. My bangs were way too short because my mother, we couldn't afford a proper haircut. So it was just bangs in every direction that she literally put a bowl on my head. And I wore a dress that I wore to my uncle's wedding while
everyone
else was in their pageant.
You look like the It's a Living... That doll. Remember that doll?
Not
It's a Living. What's the one? Remember when the doll comes to life and lives?
Chucky.
No,
Chucky.
Chucky. The girl. The little girl.
Oh, yes. Small Wonder.
Yeah, you look like the Small Wonder girl
that's
in the dress.
Kind.
Yeah.
That is very kind.
Yeah.
That's generous.
So then, but you always knew you wanted to be a performer and your parents always supported you. To come from New Jersey, where literally, like, you say you want to be an actor, they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, we don't do that. You're not from show people.
Right.
You know?
My parents were they were amazing in that way. Like, mm-hmm. They let me do community theater as a kid, and I think they would have been surprised if I didn't do it. My dad was very big on follow your dreams because he had some job losses and stuff. So he was like, there's no job security in anything. Do what you love. I have to say, and they were so supportive. They just go for it. Yeah. They even said, don't pick a backup career. You'll end up doing that.
This is crazy. My parents were like, absolutely don't do this. You're ruining not only your life, but ours.
But you know what? Yeah. You can't win. Because I remember calling my mother from the back of the sports bar I was working in. On a payphone, not getting any auditions, mm-hmm. broke as hell, calling her sobbing and saying, why did you let me follow my dreams?
That's amazing.
I was like, I have nothing.
You're pissed at them
for
supporting you. And that's why no matter what we do, we will somehow fuck up.
It's true.
That's okay.
True.
And so then you really realize, like, I got to make my own stuff or nobody is going to care or ever give me a job.
Oh, yeah. Like, every agency was like, either gain 10 pounds or lose 10 pounds. We don't know what to do with you.
Wow.
It was a lot of that. And little parts here and there that, like, no one was, shows were canceled or they didn't air. And then, so sort of like writing was always my way into my husband and I, who we were writing partners through college. And so we wrote this one-woman show for myself that was originally just like that phase where you're out of college and like looking for your first job. And it was very self-righteous and boring. And then we saw Jenna Bush speaking at the Republican convention on TV. And she made some joke where she was like, it was something about her grandmother in Sex and the City. And like, she laughed afterwards, like, they are loving us. And I was like, oh, we should combine the story. So it was, anyway, we did a one-woman show about Jenna Bush entering into life as an adult. And then that sort of like started, got me out of waitressing and things.
Well, that's it. So I would do say to anyone, any person out there who's struggling, it's like, if you can get your own stuff out there, just do that. All you have is your own voice. That's the truth. It's also really hard when people reject your own voice, because that feels, you did it's say to me personal. Once, this is unfortunately the other thing that we say over and over to each other, that sometimes this business can feel like you're at a robot factory and you build your robot and you take a really long time to build your robot and it's so beautiful. And then you have to watch somebody smash your robot in front of you.
Over and over again. And you know what that came from? I remember it was after you were making your first pilot out here. And yes.
Which I shot, by the way, on a stage that had many porns shot on it. Just so you know. This stage downtown had a police station. They had like all these different themed sets. And ours was an apartment. This was for BFF. It actually was the thing that aired on NBC. We didn't have the money. We shot it on this stage that we had to transform into this like beautiful Brooklyn brownstone, but it had definitely had seen some action.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's
some good juju.
Yeah.
I remember you coming to my just beaten down apartment, and there was something that happened. I think there was something where our robots were being smashed, and it came from, I had heard this NPR story that they did this study where they set all these people up with robots, and everyone built the robot. They spent time building the robot, and then someone would come along and smash it. And they saw how many people then they gave them materials to build another robot. And who continued to build their robots each time someone would come over and smash them, and how many people would drop off. How many people would say, I'll build another one?
Whoa, Melissa, I didn't know this was from something real.
Yeah. And so that's what I, like, when we originally started talking about it, I was like, oh, we are the idiots in this experiment who keep building the robot. Some people learn their lesson.
No, I would disagree. I think this was about resilience.
It is about resilience. You're 1,000%.
We are not the idiots.
Thank you. In fact, that's true.
If you stop building the robot, then what do you have? You've got no more robots. What you actually have to do is enjoy building the robot.
Yes.
It's not about getting it smashed at the end.
No, did you have fun while doing it?
Did you have fun while building it? And that's also life, right? It's like, where are we heading? What are we trying to get through to get to what? It's like
1,000%. It's about the process and about what we're doing in the moment and not end gaming it constantly.
And I think you and I realized, like, I think when you're young and you're like, oh, I just have to get over there.
Yeah.
Over there is going to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And if someone says you win, you get to be accepted, you know, then you'll be happy. And when you realize that that is just never going to happen, then you say, whoa, wait a second. I actually have to double down on my life and what makes me happy. Because if I can't stop my robots from being smashed, like, I better enjoy the building of them, and I better enjoy my off time when I'm not building them. I better spend it with the people I love the most. Otherwise, I'm going to be fucking miserable.
That's exactly right.
What you are referring to is when I had to see, by accident, a PowerPoint presentation where the character of Jessica from Best Friends Forever was ranked unlikable by all the people in Las Vegas. And I had to see a bar graph that showed my unlikability, and it said Jessica unlikable, because I had been
horrific.
Such an idiot and named the character after myself. And I had panicked, and I was saying to you, Melissa, like, am I an unlikable person? Who I am possibly is unlikable. I really did believe that. Like, perhaps I am. And then it turned out that the sound of my crying in the first 30 seconds of the pilot, in which my character gets served divorce papers, the sound of a woman crying
to a dude who's carrying a 40, by the way, out of walking out of a casino.
Out of the Mandalay Bay. It makes them turn their dial. This is because they test pilots in Las Vegas because they think this is a perfect cross-section of America, which maybe it is. What, I don't know.
They pay people $5 to turn a dial and tell women that the sound of their voice crying is terrible.
It's terrible. So when I would cry, they would turn it to zero. I don't like that. And so my character got this unlikable rating because they all turned, or they'll say, I'll turn that show off if I hear the sound of a woman crying. So anyway, and I probably have told this story a million times, but when the very lovely president of NBC at the time, Bob Greenblatt, said, I think if you lift out the crying, your rating's going to go up. And it did. But I spent a cool, 2 weeks thinking I'm the most unlikable person in America. And I it's hard. It's hard to shake. It's hard to shake that and to say, like, no, my unlikability, whatever that is, actually is what makes me special.
That, and I would say what everyone loves about you is your, it's relatability. It's your relatability.
No, I appreciate
just
that.
What everyone loves about you is the fact that you're so horribly unlikable.
It's hard, man. It's hard to be 20 in your 20s, in your early 30s, and looking to the outside to give you validation. That's really hard. And you and I were really in the fight with each other and trying to buoy each other up from turning on ourselves. And I think I'm really proud of how we stayed afloat.
I agree. And I think it was having you there with me as we were figuring this town out and figuring out just this, what this business was and how much stake we needed and wanted to put into it versus living our lives. We did talk about, I think we realized early on that we needed to create our own fun. In between all
the heartbreak.
Our summer of funs,
where we would have lots of weird barbecues. You would bring your tofu and I would grill my meats. I think we really did have a lot of fun before we had kids. And then, of course, when we had kids, like, everything changed, in such a wonderful way, in that we had something else to live for than this career.
It's so true. I remember seeing you as a mother for the first time and coming to your house and seeing you hold BB and being like, I honestly had never witnessed someone fall into motherhood so easily. It was just this, I'll never forget. I have a picture of it. I'll send it to you.
Please.
That I took that day of you holding BB. And it was just, this is exactly what, in all the other things that you're absolutely brilliant at, but this was just so meant for you.
And that was crazy, because I remember us both saying, now for you, I was more convinced you were meant for mothering because you are such a mother hen to us all. But I was like, what if I have no maternal urge? Like, what if I literally know how to take care of human or don't feel it? I really was, because I feel very masculine. Again, when I wrap you in my arms, it's the way who's the guy? Blake Shelton wraps Gwen Stefani. That's how I wrap you in my meaty arms. And so I did feel like, oh God, what if I don't have that? And I was pleasantly surprised that I actually took to it.
That is so wild to me. As much as I love the Blake Shelton reference and I feel it, and I want to be wrapped in your arms and have a song playing in the background, I think of it more like Meryl Streep in Mamma Mia with Amanda Seyfried. And we're doing that song about
BB's second favorite movie. Yes. Next to Letters to Juliet, which we saw in the theater.
Is that really her first?
It's her number one.
Stop.
That's her comfort watch. She's only 8 years old. She loves that film.
She wasn't born when we saw that, right?
No, she was not. It was one of my favorite movies. And you and I reference it all the time because Vanessa Redgrave brushes Amanda Siegfried's hair in the moonlight. And I always say, I wish I was there and I could brush your hair in the moonlight.
We were sitting next to each other in that movie theater. And
boy, we had
saying,
a lot of time on our hands
so,
that we were able to see that in the theater.
We went to so many movies.
We did. We did.
We were at
all the time. A lot of time on our hands. We don't have
a lot of time. Yeah. Why do I always want to be Amanda Seyfried to your either Redgrave or Streep?
Always. And I always will be. Motherhood has been such a wonderful thing. And I remember also saying to you on your porch, I just told Bibi this story because you hosted my baby shower, which was Southern France themed, of course, which was so beautiful. And I told you out on your porch, I think this is going to be my only one. And you said, and then it was so crazy because she had to be my only one because of cancer. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled with that. I struggled with the cancer taking away that opportunity to have a second one, even though I know it was my soul's journey to have her be my only. And you reminded me of that, which I did not remember ever saying that.
So interesting. I remember it very, very vividly. And because I remember thinking at the time, it was because it felt like you were getting a message. Like you were saying it.
Yeah, like, why
it was
did
like
I
very crystal clear. And it was very,
why?
I remember saying to you, like, okay, like I'll throw you another one of these if you want. But like, no, I'm really, I feel like this is it.
Strange. It was so strange. Also, because I'm from such an enormous family. That's why it was so hard for me, because I have like 50 cousins on one side and nobody has just one. And I know some of my deep divers has reached out to me to say, like, there is that struggle because, and you've been very vocal about miscarriage, which was one of the things and I'm always proud of you, but that was something I was so proud of you for doing. You did a PSA basically about miscarriage. Yes?
Yes. There was, when I found out that I was, pregnant and it looked like it was going to be a pregnancy that I would hopefully carry to term, I had been, you know, through such a fertility struggle and dealt with pregnancy loss that any time that I would read about other women who are pregnant, as happy as I am, jealousy isn't really like a go-to reaction for me. But during that time when I would read about someone's happiness with expecting a baby, because these, you know, pregnancy announcements are very, you know, glowy and bright, as I'm sure you felt.
Yeah, like nothing's happened to get there. Like, oh, they just fucked their brains out and this
totally,
just happened.
Totally, and just
that great
miracle baby.
Yeah.
I would just get sad and just feel like there was something wrong with me. So, you know, I'm super private, but I was on Big Bang at the time and knew that I was going to be showing. So I kind of had no choice but to address it at the time because it wasn't going to be easily hid. But I had a lot of issues with, like, how do I announce this in a way that is not going to make other women feel terrible? So I decided at that point that it would feel maybe inauthentic if I didn't. And no judgment to anyone who doesn't want to share it, of course. But
you turned something. Well, first of all, I think that's so you to, like, be thinking of strangers, be thinking of people, women you've never met, that you don't want your good news about being pregnant to at all hurt somebody else that you don't even know. That's so you.
Well,
but then for you to say, I'm going to take this thing, miscarriage, which is something that lives in the darkness that women have to shoulder by themselves.
Yeah.
Like it's some sort of shame, like you did it to yourself.
It's all, and I do think it's the culture of, and I think it's gotten better in recent years, and I'm so glad for that. But there's this idea of don't tell anyone till your second trimester. Why? The reason for that is because so many women miscarry in the first trimester, and they want you, like, because it will make people uncomfortable to share that shame, or you'll be embarrassed for some reason. So I think it's set up in this way. So I honestly, no one knew I was pregnant. You were one of the very few people that knew. And I realized after, I'm like, wow, this is nuts. If women just tell people early, and it's totally a personal choice, whether you want to or not. But I do think that the idea of not telling people comes from the idea of, well, what if something happens? And yeah, right? What if something happens?
And then you have to take it around and be quiet about it and go to work like nothing happened, where you are mourning the loss of a baby, and you're supposed to keep it to yourself?
And just act normal.
No.
So I do think that I'm so grateful that that conversation has become more prominent lately. And so, yeah, when I announced that I was pregnant with my first, I spoke about the pregnancy loss and just what it did mentally to me. And then right before I had her, I did, I got a group of women together. June did it. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a PSA about the fact that you're not alone and just putting more voices behind the fact that this should be something that that's spoken about more, and that it's not your fault, that we're, and that women who go through it just aren't alone. It's so common. It's so common.
And I always say to people who are deep divers, mm-hmm. who reach out to say, like, I'm suffering through a loss, and mm-hmm. I worry it's not going to work for me. And I always, and I probably said it to you, like, your baby soul, told me about the baby soul picking you. So where did you fight? Because you say that baby souls pick the person.
And know the time.
And they know the time. And it doesn't mean they're necessarily going to come through you naturally. Like, through your vagina. We don't know that.
No.
But they're coming for you.
Yeah.
So you
they
have
will
to be
find
open.
A way to you.
They will find a way to you, and they know when it's time. But it's like, I always imagined it like you're shopping for your, for your groceries, and they're up there looking, and they go, I'll take that. I'll take mm-hmm. those parents. Where did you get that from?
I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that just brought me comfort while it was going on. And I think I started buying into it more after it, happened.
Right.
But it's hard. And I feel like that the sadness around it, I feel like women aren't often given enough permission to feel the sadness around it.
Yes.
And that's something that I feel like just we need to talk about it more, because things can get real, real dark. Also, your hormones are, in addition to the grief, your hormones are going crazy. And I think that
yours took a while to, I remember, like, to recenter themselves.
Yes.
Like, which I think everybody does, but I was so intimately involved with your journey, and you were like, I'm still not right. And it's a couple months later. Like,
It took a while. And I remember talking to different fertility doctors, like, oh, this is sort of textbook. But
nobody
women just
that.
Don't know that that's what's going on. And is it the grief? Is it the hormones? There's so many components to it, and it's rough. It's so rough. And I feel like, I'm so grateful for you during talking about showing up. You showed up with ice cream to my front door.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
You sure did. There was some chocolate ice cream at my front door.
Chocolate chip. That's right. I'm like, I'll just drop it. I think the thing that you taught me too is like, drop and go.
Yeah.
You say, I'm in the neighborhood if you want to see me, but if not, if I don't hear back from you, it's on your front step.
Totally. Because I could be a hermit. So
yeah. Yeah, no. And it's like, people don't always want to peek their head out, but they want it. They might tell you they don't want the ice cream, but they do. They always want the ice cream.
It's true.
You can do that with Starbucks.
The ice cream?
I read that. That was a tip from Sheryl Sandberg's book, Option B, about when she lost her husband and she went through, this book I recommend to anybody who's having a trauma, because she worked with a scientist about how do you emerge from a trauma having grown as opposed to being damaged by it. It's called post-traumatic growth.
Wow.
And there's all these different ways that things you can do to help you have that post-traumatic growth. And one is helping other people. The other one is accepting help. And she talks about, how can you help? Well, one thing is, don't ever ask somebody, how can I help? They can't tell you. They're too, first of all, they feel bad about telling someone to do something for them. And secondly, they're too fucking tired or they can't stop crying. So just do something.
Yeah.
Do something. And her whole thing was drop it at the door, drop and go.
Interesting.
Don't ask, do you want some Starbucks? Drop it. There's a latte outside.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or I'm sending, door dashing. I'm door dashing you some food. You can also make it like you don't have a choice. Like, here's the menu. Tell me what you want or I'm ordering for you.
That's great. You're good at that.
Yes, I have to be aggressive with you sometimes. That's why I know you're working on it. You're working on letting yourself be taken care of. But yeah, so hopefully we can link to that video. Can we link to that video?
Yeah, great.
We're going to link to that video so you guys can see it. But I mean, listen, that's what I hope we're doing with this podcast. And you did it first, which is to say, like, let's share our vulnerabilities because we're stronger when we show people, I went through this too. And also an inspiration. And now look, I'm not crying all the time. You know, I have a baby. Even if that's not your journey, I'm happy without a baby. It's like, we can get through this dark time. You're not the only person that has gone through this dark time. And you are going to be okay because I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to stay like this.
That's right. That's exactly right. And just giving yourself permission that it's okay to not be okay.
That was really hard for me because I got pregnant right away when I tried with BB. And then when I had to quickly harvest eggs right before chemo. Which was a real shock. A real shock to the system to go like, oh, you have cancer. Also, by the way, you are not going to be able to get pregnant again, probably. And so you better go ahead and if you decide right now. And that was like weirdly the thing that got me the most, if you remember that day.
It was just heart-wrenching.
It was heart-wrenching.
I remember that day very vividly. And also the fact that you're having to inject yourself with hormones.
That could possibly be killing you because that's what estrogen is what causes cancer. So it helps fuel the breast cancer. So that was, and they do it very safely.
Sure.
And I had a wonderful doctor who helped me through it and it didn't work. So I did two rounds of it and I don't mean this, I hope this podcast is not too much of a bummer for anybody, but I just want you to know, like, I've been there, done that, did it twice and it didn't work. And I remember feeling like, okay, my body is rejecting me. And there is something very feminine, right? About the ability to have a baby feels like one of our rights as a woman. And when that isn't working, because what they said to me was like, you were lucky you had BB the first time because there's not enough here. I felt like I'm a broken person.
Yeah.
I really did. I felt like I had failed and I didn't know how to talk about that. And it's she's 9 years old now. It's taken me 7 years to come to grips with, like, no, it's okay. It's okay. It didn't work. But I felt like that was a secret sadness that I had to carry for a long time. And I would share it with you. And that was the other thing. I would look on Instagram, people with two kids. I had to, at one point, unfollow. This is crazy. Not unfollow. I had to mute anyone with two children.
I get it.
Because I couldn't see it. I couldn't see matching pajamas. Couldn't see matching pajamas. Christmas pajamas. Still hard for me. But now I realize I can match BB in pajamas.
Yes, you can.
Because there are positives and negatives to everything that comes in your life. There are positives, so many positives to having only one. There are so many positives for having two. There are so many positives for having none.
It's what's meant for you.
That's right. And owning it, owning that choice too, you know?
And also at some points, if you need a day to live in that sadness.
That's right.
It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. So anyway.
And it doesn't mean that you love what you have any less.
No.
Or love your life. It's still a grief and a sadness of something that happened to you.
And I feel like me going through that, and I'm sure for you too, Melissa, like it has made me feel closer to women too, because I hadn't had that experience. And so I could have gone through my life never understanding what it's like to say goodbye to an option.
Sure.
And I now have, so when I hear someone say, oh, I lost it, you know, which again, you don't hear much because everyone has to keep it to themselves. But when I do hear that, I feel like I'm better able to hear them and say, yeah, I am so sorry.
Yeah. And that I do think is an upside, I think, to any trauma or any grief is the ability to understand and empathize on a deeper level. Yes. And it really is, I think, I just got to say, what you and June are doing here, and everyone who's listening knows this, is so incredibly special. You're really doing something that is so powerful, especially in a time where I feel like we've all been through, I said this to you recently, we've all been through this global trauma of everyone sort of just trying to get back to life in a way that's like, yeah, are we okay? We're okay. But the fact that you've created a safe space here to really put it out there that there's going to be times where we're not okay. And I think we're all trying to figure out our footing back into this world again. And I mean, life is hard regardless of the fact that this world has been a shit show for the past few years.
It really has.
Yeah.
We are stronger when we are honest about it, yes, to each other.
It's true. And the fact that you have created this community where it is safe to share that and to make women feel less alone and, sorry, make people feel less alone.
Well, I have to tell you, all we're doing is talking about whatever fucking shit we're going through. And of course, pickleball, which we're not allowed to speak anymore. I'm not even allowed to say the word.
What? Why?
Well, we've developed a pickleball obsession and then we started talking about it obsessively and now we can't talk about it anymore. And I agree. That feedback was well deserved. It's the community that's created. It's weird. It's like, yes, we talk every week, but I have to tell you, the people who come out and share with me their vulnerabilities and reach out to each other over Instagram and support each other, it's like it feels like something I never imagined. And I feel so much less alone in the world for having. So it's truly a gift that those deep divers give back to me on a like 100 times a day.
I love you, deep divers.
100 times a day.
It is because of what you and June started. And it's what I, you know, those girls' nights that, and then I'll shut up, but those girls' nights that we would have with this group. And I'm so grateful that you're sharing that because talking to you and June has always been something that just makes my heart happy and has always made me feel like you could just get it out there and be 100% yourself. And what a gift that you're inviting all these listeners in to those conversations and giving the gift of yourselves, which you and June are just such remarkable, remarkable people. And
Melissa,
it's true.
You.
So
well,
I'm
see, here you are on my own podcast giving me compliments.
Well, it's what
you do. And if you could pass me a Chinese chicken salad through the screen,
it's
would.
In the chat.
That's just who you are. Now, Melissa, I don't want to wrap up, but I have to go be the lunch lady at BB's school.
What?
Which I have been told I am not to touch her.
Okay.
Look at her until she recognizes me.
You are raising her right. That's exactly what she should say.
She said, brush your hair, okay? Don't look the way you normally look. I don't want you looking like you climbed out of a pile of dry leaves. Come correct. So I've got to go give myself a blowout and then go be the lunch lady.
That's exactly what you said to me when I came to visit you at chemo.
I never remembered saying these things to you, but you do wear the craziest. You guys have to understand, you will never recognize Melissa. If you see her on the street and she's not, but I wish it was like, oh, I'm going in incognito. This is what she thinks is appropriate to wear out in the world.
I need an elastic waist pant.
It's not, but it's always like a pant that's 1,000 times too big for you.
You want to be comfortable.
Not athleisure. It's not athleisure. It's an assault
to
my eyes.
Things need to breathe.
It's an assault to my eyes. Right now, she's wearing a hat that's like 17 sizes too big for her head.
True.
It just is what she is. And a fleece from the 80s that, like, I'm sure that she got this from her childhood bedroom.
Busted. Yes. Oh, 1,000%.
It is
ill-fitting.
Clothes. It's her house clothes. All right. Melissa, I love you so much. Thank you for being with us. June sends her love. And just
Send
thank
my
you
love
for being.
To her.
an angel. You sat by my bedside, and I will never forget all the things you've done for me. And I hope I can even be a fraction of the help you were to me in life.
That's the only reason I was, is because that's what you've always been for me.
You're my sister for life.
I love you, sister.
All right. Bye, Mom.
I love you, deep divers. I'm so excited. My first deep dive.
See you guys next week.
Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go dive in deep. Let's go on the deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go dive in deep.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support this show is to rate and review. And a huge thank you to Ann Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnnGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more. We'll see you next time.